From KQED Public Radio and the California Report, this is the Capital Notes podcast for Friday, December 17th. I'm John Myers from KQED, and Kevin Yamamura from the Sacramento Bee joins me here in the studio to talk about budget items as we're here in the middle of December. And Anthony York is not here because, shockingly, folks, it did in fact happen. Anthony is a proud father. I was going to try to come up with something funny, but that's usually Anthony's part on the podcast. So Anthony and his wife Andrea welcomed their son Griffin on the 11th, and apparently everyone is doing well. Anthony is realizing, as Kevin and I do with young children, that sleep deprivation is the norm. And so we'll wish him well, and I guess he'll come back in a couple of weeks or something and tell us things. But as I was telling Kevin before we started, I think Griffin was a little bit unexpected, that, you know, they knew about what day it was going to be, but it looks like he was a few days early. So
they used the same forecasters as the state, huh?
Yeah, exactly. The forecasting is no better for Anthony's child than it was for state budgets, which is our very marginal transition into talking about state budget issues. But hey, you know, come on. What can we do? It's December. So I figured we would talk a little bit, since we didn't have a normal podcast last week. I was going to get Kevin to come in and kind of talk a little bit, if we could, about kind of where the budget process stands at this point. As everyone knows, we've had a budget revision proposal from the outgoing governor that came in about a week and a half ago. And then the incoming governor, Jerry Brown, has had now two budget, not town halls. What do we call these things?
Presentations, you know.
Presentations, not tough love, but just doom and gloom.
Doom and gloom. That's what I've referenced it as, doom and gloom presentations.
But. Two of those, one in Sacramento last week and one in Los Angeles at the start of this week, which was supposedly focused on education, but it went even beyond that, of course, as you wrote about.
Yeah, you know, the presentations, the doom and gloom budget conversations have gone. I mean, Jerry Brown, look, he's trying to paint as bleak a picture as he can. He is,
which is not exactly hard to do these days.
It is not hard to do, no, not at all. And he says he doesn't want to do gimmicks and or these one-time solutions that have been relied upon in the past.
So let's roll back to the Schwarzenegger one. Let's talk about that a little bit. Almost $10 billion package of ideas that he put forward to the legislature, and the legislature promptly said, pretty much, thanks but no thanks.
Yeah, they were pretty clear that, I mean, they had a couple of committee hearings, and I believe they met for a total of maybe, what, two and a half hours combined, and then that was it. And with that, you had Governor Schwarzenegger's last budget proposal fall flat.
Well, the one small part of it that seems to have been picked up on, talk about a little bit if you would, is this this fix, I guess we would call it, from Proposition 22. A ban on local government borrowing seems to have shot a bit of a hole.
And there was a provision in Prop 22 that undid this maneuver that the legislature and Governor Schwarzenegger had relied upon earlier this year as about a billion-dollar budget solution. So that added $1 billion to the deficit, and now looks like the legislature and the governor have found this other mechanism that just works around what the voters passed in Prop 22 by relying on weight fees.
Weight fees. They're on vehicles.
Right? On large vehicles. Yeah. And see, they said Prop 22 never mentioned weight fees, so we can just use those instead.
They mention it. No. Well, by God, there's some money we can
and
have.
And I think I asked a couple of people, are you sure this Prop 22 doesn't affect this? And they said, well, the drafters never considered weight fees, so there you have it.
There you have it. So word to the wise of anybody crafting an initiative, make sure you apparently close every single door, because if there's any door whatsoever, someone's going to find it, which is kind of the lesson of California budgeting all these years anyway. And that so that particular provision, as you said, what, about $800 million?
Yeah, I think it's works out to be about $800 million.
So great, $800 million out of a $25 billion over 18 months.
Problem. Soon, possibly soon to be 28.
And well, and that gets us to the second point. $28 billion is what. Is what Governor-elect Brown believes it's going to be, and frankly, it is going to be. I mean, from the action out of Washington, right? And this is all estate taxes, all the tax deal where the estate tax break will remain rather than being evaporating, right? Less money to California.
A lot of people expected that California wouldn't get any of this estate tax money. The LAO had to make its projection in November before Congress had acted. So they set that deficit projection at 25.4, but they did have a caveat saying that if Congress acts on the estate tax, that could add an additional $2.7 billion to our deficit.
And Brown effectively has just removed the caveat.
Brown has removed the caveat, and it looks very much like Congress is going to act on the estate tax. So 28 it is.
So $28 billion over the next 18 months, most of that in the coming fiscal year rather than the current fiscal year. Most of Schwarzenegger's proposal was not in the current fiscal year, was in the coming fiscal year, which again begs the question, what do you do in the current fiscal year? You know, you've got roughly, by the time everybody comes back, you got roughly 6 months to go. So half of the fiscal year is already gone, which makes the search for solutions that much harder. Because there are a lot of things you can no longer do because it not only because you've lost 6 months, but a lot of things take, as you and I have written about before, take several weeks, even months, usually several months, to actually gear up and happen, in which case the savings become smaller and smaller and smaller.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, if they do anything now, it will be with an eye toward getting some changes. Maybe you get a couple of months in the current fiscal year, but really it's geared toward ensuring they can get these cuts throughout the next fiscal year. And I think that's why the legislative analyst has encouraged them to do something mid-year, even if it's not solving the deficit in the current year entirely by June, by the end of June. So, I mean, it's more a matter of looking ahead, and because of that implementation period, you need to get the ball rolling.
Yeah, and fair to say, I mean, that of the 28, I'm not really sure where the estate tax money, which year, fiscal year that's lost in.
I think it's over the 18 months. It's because it's tax year 2011 is the entire year, and then you have the half year in 2012.
If you look at the 25, though, the part that existed before that, about six of that is in the current fiscal year, about 19 of that is in the fiscal year to come. And tell me what you make of the last of these two Jerry Brown events. It's hard to tell. I mean, it certainly seemed, and I was traveling during the second one, thanks to bad weather on the East Coast trying to get back to California. But reading what you had written and then what other folks around the press corps had written about what happened in L.A., the first event, when we were all there, seemed very much like Jerry Brown was sitting back, didn't talk a lot, you know, said it was going to be about solutions, not about solutions, but just about the problem, which, of course, good luck with that. And basically, everybody started arguing with each other pretty much as soon as the opening comments were made. But in the event this week, I got the sense that Brown talked more, maybe not a ton, maybe not a tremendous amount, was more a participant in the discussion in a way, more than he had been in the Sacramento budget event?
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. I wouldn't say he actually committed to his solutions or to asking for more taxes per se, but he certainly voiced very strong opinions. He several times referenced this as the day of reckoning, the moment of reckoning, that the time of using these gimmicks and patches is over. We have to solve this once and for all. This is unprecedented. I believe that's a term he's been using the last couple of weeks. He at least twice, from what I can recall, referenced the Great Depression, saying that this may be worse than the Great Depression.
But I mean, one of the things, I mean, if we just examine it politically in a way, I mean, you have heard him say a lot, I think, and well, let me backtrack that. We haven't heard him a lot, period. In the transition, he's been fairly quiet most of the time, meeting privately, not out there publicly. But I do sense more of a conversation that he's having that goes along the lines of, I didn't create this mess, and it's huge. And I think that that serves a policy and a political point there in a way that, you can't help but compare to the way Schwarzenegger came into office. Not to say that Schwarzenegger just embraced all the problems as my own. I mean, he clearly said they were Gray Davison problems. But the more an incoming governor can set aside the blame, I guess, might it create some space to say, okay, well, here's what we're going to have to do. I don't want to do it, but I didn't create this problem.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. That he is certainly, he has a chart in there, I know, that says the last three budgets, at least 75% to 85% of them were built on these faulty solutions. Has another chart in there that outlines what these gimmicks were, some of which add to the problem going forward, including those deficit bonds that Governor Schwarzenegger asked for when he came into office.
Voters approved in 2004.
Approved. And so he is clearly making the case that, look, he inherited this mess. It may be a little bit different for this governor to say he entirely inherited it, given that he was governor early on after Prop 13, and that's when some of the local government shifts were beginning in the state that he's going to be dealing with again. But yeah, he's certainly saying that this problem that he's dealing with, he's trying to make the case that this problem he's dealing with is one that he's inherited.
And yet it seems challenging, like you were referencing the documents that that the governor-elect, along with the Department of Finance, the Legislative Analyst Office, put together for the Sacramento budget session. Still struggling to figure out what the heck to call those things. And you look at it, because I brought it in here to the studio, and you look at this list of things we've done to balance the budget in the last decade, temporary fixes, things that can't be repeated, and things that made the future deficits worse. When you step back and look at the single largest dollar amounts on this list, $17 billion in federal stimulus money over a course of three budget cycles, accelerated collection of personal income taxes and corporate taxes, that whole thing we did that we went through in the big ugly budgets of basically pushing tax money, getting a cash advance almost, it seems like, on the tax money you're owed. And then the deficit recovery bonds, the economic recovery bonds from 2004, those are the single largest of the $66 billion list. Those alone account for about $37, $38 billion. I mean, clearly, more than half of them were these things that are very questionable. And I think you start to see Brown, at least charting a course of, even if we could do some of those again, I'm not going to do those again. I mean, he talked a lot about in the campaign about, the smoke and mirrors of the budget process. But the problem that he faces, the myriad of problems, but one of the problems it seems like he faces here is, let's go back to the Sacramento event, saying, well, we're just going to try to all agree on what the problem here is. They couldn't agree on what the problem was. I mean, in addition to that, they started to talk about solutions. They can't actually agree on the problem. They can't agree maybe on the size of it, but they certainly can't agree on what's defined as problem, what's unavoidable deficit versus avoidable deficit. That's a Republican-Democratic thing about, what spending we really have to do, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But he can't even, and that, I think, is such an intractable issue, it seems like, that you can't even get everyone on the same page, which is what he keeps saying he wants to do.
Yeah. And there's a reason that list exists. That list you just went through exists. It's not because Governor Schwarzenegger or any of the legislators in the past embraced, set out thinking, oh, I want to do all these one-time solutions or gimmicks. It's because that's the only place politically they've been able to go because of what you said. I mean, they can't agree on the problem. They can't agree on the solutions. What they can agree on is to sort of push the problem into the next year, and they come up with that list. And I think that's the challenge for Governor Brown. I mean, he can say all he wants that he doesn't want to do these things, but the question is whether he can politically avoid doing these one-time patches. Does he have some kind of magic solution that past governors and legislative leaders didn't have.
Yeah, and it's hard to imagine that there is one, given how many quote unquote magic solutions it seems like we have used, just even in the last two and a half years, where it seems like they've done a new budget every 6 weeks. It feels like. I get the sense that we're pretty much done for the public budget events until he takes office. There was talk that he could do as many as three. I get the sense now, I'm hearing, I don't know about you, that the one in L.A. was pretty much the last, that was the last one. And that, you know, there are a couple of things that have to happen. First of all, Brown has got to lock in his own budget proposals. What a lot of people don't seem to realize, I think, is that that budget that is presented on January 10th is actually locked into place and goes to a printer and all the decisions are made in December, because they've got to have the lead up time with the holidays and everything else. So Brown has got to make his own final budget decisions here. So I think you'll kind of hear him go into radio silence for a while. And then also with the Christmas holiday, the New Year's holiday, the attention span of the public's not there. And I mean, you know, there's no real reason to continue to do it then. And you're going to take office on January 3rd. So I think we've seen and heard all we're going to hear from Brown on the issue for now. And then the question becomes, what are we going to see on January 10th? And this is where I find fascinating, I want to talk about for a moment, is, you know, Brown is taking great pains to say, I don't want a smoke and mirrors budget. I want, you know, an honest assessment of the state's problems and those kinds of things. And so you wonder, the budget that he would put forward in January has got to not only serve that purpose, but we're also getting the sense, and I know you know this, you've found this too in your reporting, that this budget is also going to have to serve the purpose of saying, look, if you don't want to raise taxes and you want an honest budget, this is how bad the cuts are going to be. I mean, it's one of those budgets where it's not, I'm not saying that it's not a budget he would support, but his opening gambit may be, you know, of such draconian levels that he's trying to maybe jar something loose in the political blockade.
Yeah, he's trying to get people's attention. If he is in fact going to the ballot to ask for taxes, he's going to show people what your alternative is absent any additional tax revenues. And if he truly does not have any of these gimmicks, he's got to replace the gimmicks that have been relied upon with something that's real, some real cuts or some real revenues.
Talk about a little bit from what you get a sense of about this whole notion of an election in 2011. I mean, the first time we got wind of it was during the campaign, in what I still think was the one true moment where Brown actually put forward something he'd been thinking about and had, you know, and then he kind of acted as though, oh, you know, his campaign quickly walked back and said, well, that's not necessarily what he's really thinking about. And that was when he met with the Ed Board at the San Francisco Chronicle. And they were good enough to put up all the video online so we could all watch it after the fact. But he had very specific dates that he started rattling off in that conversation about when he would want some kind of consensus on budget solutions to possibly take to the ballot. And then again, his campaign said, well, that's just one option out there. But they've clearly done a lot of thinking. I mean, don't you believe it?
Yeah, I think so.
A lot of thinking about the calendar, the timeline.
And in fact, he said at this this budget event this week, he said his goal is to get it done in about 60 days, which his campaign clarified meant 60 days from January 10th. That would be March 11th, presumably setting the state up for a special election. This is me presuming. The Brown people won't admit to this, but presumably it.
But we need something to write.
Setting the state up for an election in the late spring. And I just recall 2 years ago, or I guess about a little less than 2 years ago, the state leaders did the same thing. They got the budget done for the current fiscal year and the next fiscal year, they got an 18-month budget done in February, and then they had a special election in May, also with several revenue items on the ballot. So I'm not saying that this special election would suffer the same fate as that one, but the calendar remains similar.
And so many people are already trying to you know, assume what that would look like, assume what a special election would look like, assume what the measures would look like. I mean, for instance, there's already this assumption that it's taxes. And, you know, I understand the assumption. I mean, look how big the hole is and how many ways you can solve it other than deep, deep cutting or something else like that. I do think he has other options. For example, when he announced his candidacy, he may have said it to other reporters, but I know he said it when I was talking to him. He said something like a workout plan. Well, you know, what we need is a workout plan, which is kind of one of those things that sounds like borrowing. Now, that's something you would have to go back to the voters to ask to do if you were going to do some kind of financing, refinancing, whatever we want to use, term we want to use, because the voters closed that door, ostensibly, with Prop 57 and 58 in 2004. That was the Schwarzenegger infamous tear up the credit cards, never do it again speech. So that's something you could, and again, we're just sitting here kind of opining, folks. Don't think we've got any great intel. Kevin may have some better sources than I do.
I think those are some options. That's an option. There's also another, there's speculation that there's going to be this realignment tie-in, a realignment in which the state shifts responsibilities to local governments and possibly through this ballot mechanism gives them a way to pay for it. So, I mean, he did say this week that he's going to pursue some kind of a realignment that brings the services closer to the people. So that'll be in his January plan. So this ballot could include a number of things, could include some of the other budget reforms that have been discussed and the one that's qualified related to the rainy day fund. I mean, there's also that Think Long committee, group with the billionaire philanthropist who is
Nicholas Berguin, the homeless billionaire, as they call him, the man who lives on a plane and has pledged right $20 billion, $20 million. Sorry, $20 billion. $20 billion, we'd be done this year.
Yeah, you know,
$20 million to some kind of reform of California government. But let me back up just for a moment. So we've got this budget reform measure that is supposed to be on the ballot in 2012. That was part of this year's budget deal. The expansion of the state's rainy day fund is really primarily what it is. That could be moved up.
Yeah. I mean, that could be another one of those deals. I don't know if this would work politically, but it could be another one of those deals where they say, look, we're going to ask you for more taxes, but we're also going to ask you for these other measures that are going to solve our problems in the long run.
Brown and Schwarzenegger campaigning together? I mean, I could.
You could. And even, hey, Gray Davis is working with this this Think Long committee. He'll come back out too. I mean,
But so many people want to draw the parallel to the special election in 2009, where those budget-related measures all went down to defeat. And totally reasonable to go back and look and do that. But as you and I know, those measures, they kind of did a little bit of everything all at the same time. I mean, nothing more obvious than the centerpiece of that thing, which would reform the budget process and increase taxes. It was the one that I always thought was too clever by half a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, it sounded great inside the Capitol, like, well, let's make sure that we've completely immobilized our opposition by no one will want to kill it because there's something in it they like. Well, the reverse happened. Everybody wanted to kill it because there was something they hated. No one loved it. And, you know, and so, I mean, maybe that's one of the lessons, too, is that you can't lump all of those in the same measure. I mean, you know, or you've got to, you know, because that's the great thing. I mean, we always get bombarded by people who tell us why the voters voted the way they did in 2009, a low voter turnout, we should mention. But, you know, people say, oh, well, they voted against it because they didn't want the tax increase. And another side says, oh, well, they voted against it because they thought it was a bad reform of the budget process. Well, nobody really knows.
And it was a confusing ballot, another confusing ballot. And you're right. I mean, you had the John Kupal at the Howard Jarvis Taxpayers Association working with SEIU and some labor groups to defeat that ballot measure that you mentioned with taxes and rainy day fund.
An unholy alliance almost.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, yeah, people that are never on the same side. And so, you know, you've got to think if you're Brown or you're people close to him, if you're going to go back to the ballot, how do you do it differently? You know, what lessons do you learn from the 2009 fiasco if you're asking the voters to weigh in on the problem?
I don't know. It's going to be a challenge if he wants to ask the voters for taxes in a special election. I mean, you mentioned the last one had low voter turnout. So you're talking about another low voter turnout election. I see people more motivated to turn out to vote against taxes than to vote for them, perhaps. I mean, in this situation, and what I gather is that schools are going to be front and center of any campaign, and you can already see, I mean, some of the audience members at that event this week on education that Brown had were just asking him, you know, can you please extend these taxes? We need more taxes. We've had enough at the schools. So I would imagine that a case will be made that we need this for the schools. It'll be interesting. And maybe you're right. I mean, they've got to figure out a way not to get it too cluttered so you don't suffer the same consequence that they had in 2009.
All right, well, listen, thank you for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thanks, John.
Kevin Yamamura from the Sacramento Bee writes on budget issues for them. And again, our friend Anthony York, fully at home with dirty diapers and probably up in the middle of the night, chastising us for talking about it on the podcast. But we'll see if he comes back sometime soon, and we'll bring Kevin back to make us smart. So that'll do it for this podcast. I'm John Myers from KQED. Thanks for listening.